Hey, I'm CJ, a millennial. You may know me from the podcast Science with Millennials. Well, you'd be correct, but this time we're coming at you with something other than science. We're going to be utilizing Rachel's forensic science degree and my psych knowledge to bring you a podcast that will be both thrilling and chilling.
If you haven't guessed from the title, we're going to be talking about true crime. I absolutely love learning about different true crime cases and have a plethora of knowledge pent up in my brain about cases I've read about, listened to, and watched on TV. So we're going to be utilizing my forensic chemistry degree as well as CJ's psych knowledge. As a reminder, CJ doesn't know what the case is before recording the episodes, so it's a mystery for you and her. Let's open today's case file and see what's in store. Welcome to True Crime with Millennials. All right. It's a new episode of True Crime with Millennials. Are you excited?
Absolutely.
So we're going back in time, but not quite as far. We're going back to 2005. Well, I guess we're going to start in the end of 2004. Around the end of, like, November of 2004, a 16-year-old named Adrian Reynolds moved from Kilgore, Texas to East Moline, Illinois. Sorry. I just did the thing.
It's like, yeah.
But yeah, so she moved to Illinois. She was in Texas. She was living with her mother. I believe her mom was like 16 when she had her, so it wasn't a very like stable relationship. And her mom kind of had a lot of problems. So she moved up to Illinois to live with her father and her stepmother. When she moved there, she started at a school called Black Hawk College Outreach Center, which was kind of a school for like troubled students, a place for people to get their GEDs, stuff like that. So she was having a hard time in school. When she moved there, she had absolutely no high school credits whatsoever. So she started attending this school to try to get her GED because she wanted to join the Marines. I guess I didn't realize that you had to have a GED to be in the Marines or like the military, but I don't know. Never have I ever considered joining the military, so. But yes, so she started going to this kind of school for troubled kids, and she soon met Sarah Kolb, who was kind of known as, like, the main bitch on campus. Think, like, Regina George from Mean Girls. She was a... She was described as a goth girl. Same.
Who? The popular girl?
Yeah.
Okay.
And everybody knew she was pretty controlling and could be, like, kind of crazy and mean. So, Adrian and Sarah quickly became friends. And Adrian also became friends with Corey Gregory, who is... Some sources just said friend, some said boyfriend. I think they had dated previously, maybe for a little bit. This guy named Corey Gregory. He had, I think, dated Sarah previously, but now he's, like, obsessed with Sarah. Like, love of my life will die for her. These three all kind of become friends because Sarah and Corey are inseparable, so when Adrian starts school, they kind of become, you know, like an inseparable trio kind of thing. So Sarah was beginning to show, like, romantic interest in Adrian, and Adrian was described by her friends as bi-curious. So yeah, so they all kind of become super close. Sarah starts to get a crush, or starts to show romantic interest in Adrian. And Adrian, even though she's never really, like, been into girls in the past, starts to, you know, kind of starts to, like, fall for Sarah in that way that you do when you're in high school and dumb. Not that liking girls is dumb. I meant, like, those stupid, like, nobody in high school is actually in love with each other for the most part.
Yeah.
So they all start hanging out. Adrian's parents, or her dad, met Sarah once, and he said she looked like a thug because she wore black clothes and had piercings. And I was like, same. I apparently look like a thug. Well, I don't have any piercings anymore, but anyway, eventually Sarah invites Adrian to a party. And at this party, Adrian and Sarah like show up together. They're kind of like, Adrian's her date to the party or whatever. But at the party, Adrian starts, you know, flirting with guys and ends up sleeping with one of the guys at the party. And she, in the like couple weeks since she started at the school, she's become super popular at the school. So she's, you know, becoming not quite as dependent on Sarah anymore. She, you know, is, all the guys kind of want to get with her, and she's kind of turning into the it girl a little bit, I guess. So after this party where Adrian sleeps with a guy, Sarah apparently pulls out a knife and, like, threatens to kill Adrian. But Sarah was kind of known for making, like, wild threats that weren't backed up by anything. So it kind of just got written off as, like, oh, haha, Sarah's just crazy, you know, whatever. I think, like, a day later or a couple days later, Adrian went to a party by herself. And Sarah showed up at that party. And Adrian was sleeping with another guy at this party. And so Sarah was pissed and started, like, screaming at her, calling her all the horrible names you can think of in front of the whole party. And everybody obviously felt bad for Adrian. They were like, Sarah's just being, like, ridiculous right now. That whole situation kind of ended. At this point, she is threatened to kill Sarah or Adrian either to her face or to other people behind her back multiple times. Nobody's, like, said anything. Where I'm coming from, if somebody pulls a knife out, and, like, threatens to kill someone, I don't care how many times they do stuff like that, you should probably call the police. Like,
I mean, when they're doing it consistently like that, it kind of just seems like, you know, that would be the first line of action, or getting her into counseling, or at least alerting her parents.
Yeah. So now we're going to skip ahead to January 21st, 2005. Adrian's dad said she was really, like, settling into her new school and doing really well. So she's settling into her new school really well, other than her dad not liking Sarah. It's going pretty well. She has a job. She's working at Checkers. So she wakes up on her stepmother wakes her up on the 21st of January and asks her if she has work that night. She says yes at 5 o'clock. And, you know, they all go about their day. Adrian goes to work, or goes to school. While at school, Sarah invites Adrian to join her and Corey and a guy named Sean, who I think was another guy that Sarah was dating at the time, to go to Taco Bell for lunch or something. So they all, you know, climb in the car. And if it's anything like my high school days were, I would, like, fit approximately 6 to 8 people in my 2-door Honda Civic and drive us to, usually to Popeyes, because that was closest. How we fit 6 to 8 people in a 2-door Honda Civic, I don't understand to this day. So,
yeah, we didn't have off-campus lunch, so I can't relate.
Well, we didn't have off-campus lunch, but I was in so many, like, after-school programs and stuff that I would get to school at, like, 6:30 in the morning, and I wouldn't get home till, like, 8 or 9, sometimes even 10 o'clock at night. So I had school, and then right after school, I had vocal ensemble, which was technically a class, but we met after school, but it's a choir that you have to audition for to get into. So I had practice for that, and then after that was done, we'd have 30 minutes before we had to be at drama rehearsal. And so I'd cram, like, all of the people from vocal ensemble, because of course we're all, like, music nerds, we're all in the musical too, so I'd cram, like, all of the people from vocal ensemble into my 2-door Honda Civic and drive to get us food real quick before we had to be back for play rehearsal. I was a big ass nerd.
Yeah, we've established this, but it just keeps getting worse.
Worse? Not better?
I mean, like, worse, like it's just piling on top of each other. I think it's
great. I'm proud of my nerddom. I took AP Music Theory in my senior year of high school, and I failed the AP test for it because I am hard of hearing, and, like, over half the test is listening skills. And I was like, cool. So, not gonna pass that shit. Cool.
That seems unfair.
Well, I didn't really know I was hard of hearing at the time, so... Anyway, that's beside the point.
Yeah, definitely got off track there, but it's fine.
So they all jumped into the car and they go to get food at Taco Bell. While they're driving, apparently Adrian and Sarah start having like a huge argument. And so when they get there, Sean just like dips out of the car. He's like, bye, Felicia. I'm fucking out of here. So he just jumps out of the car and I guess like goes into Taco Bell. I don't know. I couldn't find, like, any information on what happened to Sean, like, after he dips out of the car. Like, I don't know if they just left him there. I don't know if they were like, yeah, we'll take you back to school. I don't know what happened. But in the car, Corey holds down Adrian while Sarah strangles her with a belt and then beats her with a wooden handle. So, like, they're brutally just murdering this girl in the Taco Bell parking lot, which definitely isn't, like, the part... If I had to pick a fast food parking lot for that I think somebody has been murdered in, it probably wouldn't be Taco Bell.
You know, I feel like I would it'd be think Checkers. Taco Bell.
Checkers is sketchy.
You really think so? Because it's also called Rallies, and I love Rallies, and it's never been sketchy.
I've had Checkers once in my life, and I hated it, so... I might be a little biased. But Taco Bell just seems like it's all stoners that go to Taco Bell. Like, nobody's murdering people in the parking lot. But I guess people are murdering people in the parking lot.
I was gonna say, she got murdered in the parking lot.
Anyway, so after this, obviously they're, like I said, no information on what happens to Sean. Like, he's just gone. He dipped into an interdimensional portal and was like, bye. So after this, they're like, oh shit, you know, like, we have a dead person in our car now. So they take the body to Sarah's grandparents' farm. Oh, well, first, before they do this, they just go get McDonald's for lunch. They're just like...
Is her body?
Yeah, just casually go get McDonald's for lunch.
How did they hide that?
I don't know. But then they go to Sarah's grandparents' farm, and they try to burn the body with gasoline. But for those of you who are new to true crime, bodies require a much higher temperature than gasoline burns at to burn. So, like, I'm not saying you should try to burn a body, but if you're going to, use something that burns at a much higher temperature than gasoline. Just saying. That is... The ones, there's, like, a couple of killers who have had, like, fed their victims to pigs, and it always, like, freaks me the fuck out. Pigs will eat anything.
Yeah.
So after several hours, they're like, shit, this isn't gonna work. So they find some random, like, 16-year-old kid named Nathan Gaudet and get him, somehow convince him to help dismember her body. So this Nathan kid gets a handsaw and literally just like chops off her head and arms with a handsaw, which probably took a fair amount of strenuous activity.
Oh, for sure.
So they get this person. I couldn't find anywhere if they actually knew this person or not. I'm assuming they did, because most people don't just recruit random 16-year-olds to dismember the people they kill, but I don't know. They basically then put the head and arms in garbage bags and dispose of them at Black Hawk State Park. For the people that don't know that she's been murdered, you know, all they know is she went out, is... Her parents realized that she never comes home to change into her uniform before she had to go to work. So they go to Checkers and they ask if they've seen her. Checkers obviously says, nope, haven't seen her.
Probably salty that she did a no-call, no-show.
Well, I guess maybe she hadn't been working there for long enough for them to be concerned. And I've worked at fast food restaurants before, and I know, like, if somebody did a no-call, no-show, usually it was just kind of like, eh, par for the course.
I guess I haven't had that same experience, because they would get real mad.
Well, I mean, they'd be mad. Like, you weren't allowed to come back, but, like, they wouldn't, like, call the police or anything. They'd just be like, well, you know, they're not here, so I don't care where they are as long as they're not here.
Yeah.
Her parents, you know, start calling around everywhere she could possibly be, and around 8 p.m. they finally call the police to report her missing. So the police obviously start doing their investigation. They talk to all her friends. Well, they speak with her friends who told the police that she left school for lunch with Sarah. So obviously then they want to talk to Sarah. Sarah said that they dropped her off at McDonald's and that she probably ran away. And she actually, like, apparently expressed some concern for her welfare. So during their investigation, the police actually, they finally find her body on January 26, 2005. And so actually it didn't take them very long. But yeah, I mean, this case is really weird because it's like, I hated high school, but, like, never was I like, I'm gonna murder someone in a Taco Bell parking lot. And I was, like, terrorized in high school.
Right.
But also it's weird in, like, how it's reported and, like, because if you just read certain, like, news stories and don't go into depth about it, they're just like, oh, yeah, she flirted with Corey, and Corey was Sarah's boyfriend, so she got mad and killed her. And I'm like, but if you dig deeper, it's like, no, Sarah was trying to, like, was interested in Adrian and was trying to have this, like, relationship or whatever. And also just was seemed like a very controlling person in general. Just started to lose that control, it seems like, and then couldn't handle losing the control, I guess. Yeah, I don't know. Apparently Corey is still, like, in love with her, too. In love with Sarah, too. So do you want to talk about adolescent brains for a little bit?
Sure. So one of the big things with adolescents is that their brain isn't developed all the way, which I think we've talked about a couple times. Your brain doesn't finish developing until you're, like, 25 or 26. And a lot of... Like, I know that, like, adults in their older years are like, oh, recalling on being a teenager, and they think of it as their glory days, but they don't forget, or they don't remember dealing with all the high emotions and stuff like that, and the raging hormones and whatever. But, like, a lot of teenagers, I'm going to say, like, 90% of them, if not more, are very, like, egocentric. So, like, a lot of the world to them is revolving around them. So they feel like, that's why they feel like the self-conscious, like, more so when they're teenagers, because they feel like everyone's looking at them all the time and that they have to, like, impress everyone all the time, even though that may not necessarily be true, you know? And it's like when you're a toddler, it's a similar concept, but, like, with being a toddler, it's like you don't understand that other people have a different perspective of the world, and that's where you, like, learn it, is in that age range. And then as you get older, as a teenager, you start recognizing that other people have emotions and different outlooks on the world, but it's still not, like, coming full circle. You're still figuring it out. So, like, a lot of it is like, oh, I figured out more about myself, and now I need to, like, start learning how to focus on other people. But it sounds like she was just so, like, caught up in her own world that, you know, it just became, like, you're supposed to be doing what I want you to do and not what other people are, or, like, you're not allowed to have free will, you know?
Right. If you offered me, like, $10 million to go back to high school for 1 week, I'd tell you to go to hell. That's how bad high school was for me. It was like, and then I would look at people and they'd be like, oh, well, this is supposed to be the best time of your life. And I was like, well, damn, I sure hope not.
Yeah, it's not for everyone. I mean, some people it is, but it's really, I always think this too, it's really like a popularity contest, and like, who's the most attractive person? Like, generally, the people that are more popular are more emotionally immature.
Well, so, like, and, I mean, my senior year was okay because I finally found, like, a solid group of friends, and I pretty much just hung out in the theater director's room, like, the entire day because I only needed to take one class my senior year to graduate. So I just filled the rest of my schedule with, like, every class that she taught and just hung out in there, like, all the time. So it was a little better because I kind of hid, but high school was just awful.
I mean, it's awful for a lot of people, too. I split my time between going to a trade school and, like, my junior and senior year going to a trade school and then my home school, which I hated being at my home school. I was only there for 3 hours and I was half asleep the whole time because I'm not a morning person, so. And then, like, I've always had a group of friends. I mean, it was just, like, a lot of, like, random bullying by people, and, like, I just got to the point where I was done with it and just stood up for myself and was like, look, I'm done with this.
I got picked on a lot because I was the weird kid that, like, brought a book to class and would just read because I'd finish the work, like, super fast. And then I'd get in trouble with the teacher for reading in class even though I was done my work. Then I'd get made fun of by the rest of the class for being a nerd. And also I got the thing a lot where, like, two guys would walk up to me and one would be like, hey, my friend thinks you're really cute and wants to go out with you. And his friend would be like, ew, dude, she's ugly. That's gross. And then they'd walk away laughing. And I was like, the first time I was like, oh, that hurt a little bit. And then, like, the 82 other times it happened, I was just like, no new jokes? Okay, cool.
Man, you really got ragged on in high school, didn't you?
Oh, it was horrible. Yeah, it was awful. Awful, awful.
Getting back on topic, though, you know, it's just, like, when you're at that age, if you're not getting your way, and especially, do we know any more about her home life?
Sarah's, not that I could find. One interesting thing is that since they were convicted, they were both convicted, by the way, and they're both still in jail, but since they were convicted, a new law was passed, or a new, I can't remember if it's a law or a Supreme Court ruling, I believe it was a Supreme Court ruling, that minors shouldn't get life sentences kind of thing. Because, you know, they're not, their brain's not fully developed, blah, blah, blah. So obviously both of these people were, one was 16, one was 17. Corey was 17 and Sarah was 16. They both appealed their sentences, and because I believe they both have life in prison without the possibility of parole or something like that. And Sarah was denied the appeal, but Corey, sorry, I don't know why I couldn't remember his name, I just said it. But Corey was granted the appeal, so he might get his sentence lessened and could potentially get out. Which, I mean, he held her down, but I guess he didn't actively kill her, at least.
Yeah. But he's still an accomplice.
Oh yeah, for sure, but...
They admitted to killing her, though?
No, they both pled not guilty, but I believe that, I don't know what they said in statements to the police, I couldn't find anything specifically on that, but they did both plead not guilty, so I'm assuming that either they made statements and then retracted them, or they were able to just piece together what happened by statements of other people, like Sean, gotcha. Who, like, dipped out. He was like, I'm not taking part in this.
He's like, I'm out.
If it was, like, nowadays, I'd picture him, like, dabbing away. But, I don't know. What did people do in 2005 that was weird?
I don't know. I was in fifth grade.
Trip pants. People did trip pants in 2005.
And those are weird.
Trip pants were, like, the coolest thing ever. I never had any because my mom said they were too goth, but, like, every boy I ever had a crush on in, like, middle school and high school wore trip pants, so.
Yeah, I had some.
In case you haven't noticed by now, CJ and I were emo kids. Well, at my school it was, like, scene kids, but, you know, same thing, just instead of black it was bright colors.
I mean, I was, like, halfway between goth and scene, I would say.
The scene worked better for me because my mom, whenever I would try to buy black clothes, would be like, are you going goth? So at least if I was buying, like, rainbow colored clothes, she wasn't, like, freaking out.
I mean, whatever works, right?
So what's your opinion on the whole, like, you know, adolescents shouldn't be sentenced to life in prison?
I agree.
Okay, can you elaborate on that a little bit more?
Well, like I was saying, their brains aren't fully developed, so, like, the choices they're making as a teen, like, when they say that 18-year-olds are adults, it's kind of ridiculous to me. I think that the legal age of being an adult should be closer to 21, but what do I know? An 18-year-old is not able to make adult decisions like that for the most part, unless their brain is, like, magically fully developed or, you know...
Right,
whatever,
but I mean, they still knew what they were doing. Like, they still know killing people is wrong, right? Like, I mean, I guess it's maybe harder to control their emotions, but, like, if you still know killing people is wrong and you kill somebody, like, what's to say they're not just gonna get out of prison and just kill more people? Especially with, like, the way our prison system can negatively impact people who are a part of the system.
Right. I just think that, like, yeah, they have a sense of morals, but they should be not necessarily, like, live in prison, but, like, you know, at least 10 or 15 years.
I mean, so I agree as well. I'm just being devil's advocate here for shits and gigs.
You're very much like my partner in that way.
Is it an Aries thing?
Yeah, I was gonna say you're Aries squared.
We're the same person. It's fine. What about... Well, also... It's kind of interesting because as I was reading, like, articles and stuff about this, you can tell the difference in the way things were written about back then relating to LGBT issues. You know, like, they were talking about these girls potentially having, like, a lesbian relationship as if it was, like, as if they were, you know, sacrificing virgins to Satan or something. I mean, not quite that extreme, but you can definitely tell, like, you know, it's got a negative connotation to it still. And that's one of the weird things about, like, researching old cases is you have to take how society, like, looked at everything into consideration, too. Because, you know, like I said, if you just scratch the surface of articles about this case, you find mostly like, oh, you know, it was a regular love triangle. They both liked the same guy. But then you actually look into it deeper and it's like, nope, neither of them were even dating the guy. Like, the guy was just in love with Sarah.
Yeah, they just like to demonize LGBTQ+ relationships, unfortunately.
So,
even now it's something that happens, but it's not as prevalent as the early 2000s.
As for Corey, he is still, as far as I know, he's still, like, obsessed with Sarah. And he's now, you know, a grown-ass man. So, like, what causes... Because I can see, you know, like, when you are in love, and I did air quotes with that, in love in high school, like, you 100% are like, I will do anything for this person. Like, this is my ride or die for the rest of my life. Which, I was the same way. Like, trust me, I mean, I don't know if I would have helped him kill someone, but, you know, I was dedicated. I was also stupid, but I was dedicated. So, like, I understand that, but, you know, as he aged, what do you think... Like, they're both in jail. It's not like they're, like, having a relationship together. What do you think is causing him to still be so, like, obsessed with her? Do you think it's perhaps he feels like he has to be, or what he did is, like, worse? Because, like, if he didn't really love her, like, what he did was more evil? I don't know.
See, how I'm gonna look at it is from two perspectives. One, like I was saying, their brains don't fully develop until you're in your mid-20s. And then two, the idea of a hopeless romantic. But the first one is, like, he was essentially stunted at that age, like, mentally maturing at that age. He was stunted because that's the last thing, basically, that the last relationship he really had, or strong feelings towards someone in that way, before he went to jail and serving life in prison or whatever. So, like, that's something to cling on to as, like, a beacon of hope, like, after I get out, I can be with this person, or, you know, and I know... Unfortunately, I know someone that went to prison, and he was a grown adult, but he still had that same mindset of, like, oh, when I get out, this is something I have to look forward to. So, like, it's just, like, clinging on to something from the outside world of, like, outside of your realm that's in there. So, like, again, with him being, like, that age, even if she straight up said that she hated him, he probably would still just be like, well, I still love you, you know, because he's already built that connection in his head, and I'm sure that he's come up with, like, a whole fantasy situation of, like, what's going to happen or what happened, and, like, how he's justifying what he did for her because he loves her, and then, like, if you're looking into the hopeless romantic side of it, it's kind of like what you're mentioning about how you do anything for the person that you were, like, dating in high school. Same concept, just, like, taking it to a new level. Like, he's already committed to this person and, like, so in love with them and, like, emotionally attached. And then it's like, okay, I'll do anything for you. And it kind of reminds me of... You haven't watched You, have you?
No. But you explain the plot to me.
It reminds me of that, though. Like, he's just decided that he's in love with this person, that he's going to do anything for them, even if he kills them, like, kills another person.
So, I would just like to give a public service announcement that, like, I was that person with my high school sweetheart who was, like, he's the one for me. Like, he treated me pretty horribly, but, like, I was like, I can't leave. He's, like, the love of my life. Like, there's not going to be anyone else. He's the one for me. That is all bullshit. If you are in a toxic relationship, there are plenty of fish in the sea. And I know that's easier said than done, but, like, just hopefully one more person saying it to you helps at least a little bit. But I promise you, there's not only one person that's right for you. And if someone's treating you horribly, then they ain't it.
I agree.
But yeah, if my high school sweetheart ever listens to this podcast for some reason, suck dicks, bye. Anyway.
I second that.
His name was Cody. You're the first Cody I've had a relationship with since him.
Aww.
I, like, would actively swipe left on Cody's on Tinder and stuff, because I was like, I can't. I'm not prepared yet.
Is that why you ghosted me the first time that we started talking?
Potentially. Or just because I have a lot of things in my brain, and, like, if I'm not directly looking at something, like, hey, I have a message, it doesn't exist.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's a fun story we should tell on the science podcast.
Oh, yeah.
When we're doing an episode on dopamine.
But yeah, I don't know, like...
Spoiler.
This case is, like... kind of cut and dry, I guess, but also, like, super sad. Like, this girl was trying to get her life together, you know, she was so young, just having a good time, trying to, like, make a future for herself, and because of some controlling-ass 16-year-old and her brainwashed, lovesick puppy, she died in, like, a horrific way, too.
Yeah, what is your take on, like, the type of, like, how they killed her?
Hi guys, it's CJ from True Crime with Millennials. If you are wanting to support us more than just listening, be sure to give us all the stars that you can on any platform. That really helps spread the word about our podcast, as well as checking us out on social media. You can find us on Instagram at True Crime with Millennials. We're also on Facebook, which is True Crime with Millennials. You can also go on Anchor and tip us, which would be great. It helps support the podcast for the future, and we will be introducing merch soon. So be looking forward to that. And yeah, make sure to share our podcast with friends and family as well. And don't forget about Science with Millennials. We have that podcast as well, and that comes out every Wednesday. This podcast comes out every Friday. Thanks for listening.
Well, I mean, it fits with what happened. So she was strangled and then beaten, and they both were kind of improvised weapons. So it definitely fits with, you know, Sarah flying in, like, them getting into an argument and, like, not like a planned thing, and her just kind of snapping and killing her. So, like we've said before, strangulation is generally a super personal, rage-filled crime, because you have to get up close and personal. And granted, this was not manual strangulation. She was using a belt. But still, you know, you're right there. You're literally, like, watching this person struggle and die. Also, it's harder to strangle a person than you would think it is. Like, nobody's out here being like, which is why it's always crazy when people are like, oh, I accidentally strangled them. And I'm like, no, you don't do that as a whoops. Like, it takes a while. And, like, usually with strangulation, if you're not, like, real pissed or and don't know what you're doing, because with strangulation, like, the person's going to pass out before they actually die. So a lot of times if you're either not super pissed or, you know, you don't know what you're doing, like, when they pass out, they'll be like, oh, they're dead, and, like, let go or whatever. Yeah, it definitely seems like a... Because even after she strangled her, which was her cause of death. So she strangled her to death and then beat her with a wooden... I forget what it was, like a wooden stick or something like that. That's overkill. So overkills are another big sign of rage and, like, a personal... you know, an assassin's not going to come in and, like, take the time... Well, also strangulation takes time. So they're not going to take the time to strangle you, then beat you if you're already dead. You know, they're going to come in with the easiest possible method. They're going to poison you or they're going to shoot you and then just leave you there.
How did they not see, like, get caught by people driving through the parking lot?
That I have no idea about. I mean, because it's lunchtime in a Taco Bell parking lot. Like, I don't know how they weren't seen.
Maybe they just thought they were doing something else.
But yeah, I mean, and then the disposition of the body just shows, you know, also that this wasn't very planned. It's not like these people knew what to do with a body. Like, they went and tried to burn it with gasoline, which, if you knew anything about getting rid of a body, would know does not work. The whole thing is just very clearly unplanned and disorganized. Do I think that Sarah had premeditation, as in she wanted to kill her? Yes. But I don't think she had decided, like, when and how until, like, right around when it happened, you know?
It was just, like, the next time that she got super mad at her, she was like, I'm done.
Because, I mean, she was threatening to kill her multiple times, she pulled a knife on her, like, I think that, first of all, I think it's sad that nobody said anything, because I feel like this could have been avoided. Like, she said multiple times she wanted to kill her, and even threatened her with a knife, and nothing happened. But also, like, I get it. I went to a really, for lack of a better word, I guess, white trash high school where, you know, there was tons of fights, there was lots of drugs, there was, you know, crime all over the place. Like, somebody brought firecrackers into the lunchroom and we were on lockdown for like half a day because they thought it was like somebody shooting off a gun in school. Like, the school I went to was very, like, chaotic and, like, tough. So I wouldn't... Like, I guess if I saw two people, like, get into a thing and, like, one of them pulled a knife, I wouldn't think... I mean, I don't think I would... I wouldn't have necessarily said anything, I guess. Unless it was somebody, like, I knew. Or the person threatened was somebody I knew really well. Just because that kind of thing happened all the time, and then, you know, the next week they'd be, like, BFFs again or whatever.
Why would she get in the car with them, though, is what I want to know, if they were fighting like that.
Well, I mean, I think the fight didn't start till they were already in the car, so maybe, you know, they were having... I mean, high school friendships are so, like, just all over the place, you know? Like, you know, one day you're not speaking, the next day you're, like, braiding each other's hair again. You know, I think that's just another, like, artifact of it being a high school relationship. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess if just, like, someone had threatened to pull a knife on me, or did pull a knife on me, or, like, threatened to kill me all the time, I wouldn't want to hang out with them, which is why I'm like, why would she go off campus to get in a car with these people that are clearly not mentally stable?
Yeah, but, I mean, you're thinking about it from, like, an adult's rational perspective. And also, like, remember, they're going to a school specifically for, like, troubled kids. So, you know, she's probably been in, like, hopefully not this exact situation before, but probably been in semi-dangerous situations before. I think that she had been to rehab before and stuff like that as well. So, like, she's not completely new to behavior like this, probably. And also, I mean, I had friends do some pretty... Nobody threatened me with a knife, thankfully, or told me they wanted to kill me. But I had friends say pretty horrible things to me in school, And, you know, like, 3 days later, I would still be, like, hanging out with them and, like, sitting at their lunch table and stuff, you know? I feel like that's just kind of how relationships are then, because you haven't realized that, you know, you don't need toxic people in your life, and especially since she was new, kind of, to town, you know, these were supposed to be her, like, best friends in this new town. You know?
Yeah, I guess, like, when I was in high school, I had, like, a couple toxic relationships, but, like, I, you know me, I've always been a person of, like, someone's, like, being not kind, that I'm gonna be, like, deuces, you know?
Yeah, see, so, like, but, like, I was even never like that until I broke up with my ex and he, like, really screwed me over. I was never like that. I would just put up with everybody's crap. And, you know, it wasn't till after I got out of that toxic relationship that I finally was, like, my eyes were opened and I was like, oh my gosh, like, I need to put myself first. I think it could easily, because for me, I like to hope that if somebody had, like, threatened to kill me and, like, actively pulled a knife on me, I would have been like, deuces, this is too much. But, like I said, I had some friends do some pretty shitty things to me, and I still would, like, forgive them 3 days later, and we'd be best friends again. So, I definitely can kind of see how it would happen. I feel like high school relationships are just so dramatic and, like, roller coastery anyway. One day you're like, I hate them, I never want to see their freaking face again, and then the next day you're like, oh my god, they're my best friend!
I guess I'm just, like, I understand it from a psych perspective and, like, development-wise, but, like, actually experiencing it was very different for me. You know, like, my mom will attribute to this, too. I've always been a person that, like, is really good at making friends. It's easy for me. It comes naturally. I like to, like, help people and take care of them. And, like, I think it just got to the point where people were, like, I don't know. I remember this one kid and, like, I think it was in 9th grade, 10th grade, I don't know. I was in sophomore English. And his name was Jake, ironically, that's my brother's name. But, like, I'll never forget him because he was, like, just, like, one of the popular kids, like, in the middle of being popular and, like, not being popular. So, like, he was, like, still trying to find his way. But either he had a crush on me or he really just wanted a target to annoy me. Because I remember, like, you know, I was dressing scene or whatever and I wanted to, like, dress that way because I like the style. And I remember him, like, always, like, hissing at me or, like, calling me vampire and, like, saying all these other things. And I just turned around one day because he was making me mad and I just hissed at him. I mean, he never talked to me again.
I had a kid one time at the beach ask me if I was a vampire because I was so pale. And I was like, yes. And he just, I said yes with, like, a dead-ass serious face. And he just, like, started crying and turned and ran away from me.
Well, you know, like, it's just, like, things like that where I'm just, like, I'm not gonna deal with you acting like this.
Yeah, no, I was never like that. And I wasn't good at making friends either until I got, literally until, like, 2 or 3 years ago. I finally, so, long story short, we talk about this in Science with Millennials. If you want to go listen to that episode, I don't think it's out yet, but, you know, it'll be out eventually. But I am autistic, and because of that, I, like, didn't understand how to, like, relate to people or, like, make friends, really, until recently when I finally figured out, like, the correct combination of, like, rules in my head to correctly interact with humans, I guess. Yeah, no, I was never like that. And growing up, like, I was raised super religious and I was always taught, you know, like, put everybody else before yourself, you know, like, think of yourself last. Like, you gotta put everybody in front of you. So, like, I would basically never stand up for myself, and I had super low self-esteem, and I would just let people walk all over me like a freaking doormat.
Right, which, you're not like that now.
No, now I'm like, will literally punch you right in the face. Okay, maybe not, but, like, we'll definitely ghost the shit out of you and never talk to you again.
I was gonna say, you're too much of a softy to beat someone up.
I know, I'm such a pacifist, it's ridiculous. I've got, like, all that, you know, fiery Aries energy, and then I'm just, like, actually a teddy bear on the inside. So yeah, I guess that's pretty much it, unless you have any, like, closing thoughts.
I feel like there's details missing from this case. Like, it seems cut and dry, but at the same time,
what kind of details do you feel like are missing?
I really want to know why she got in the car with her.
I'm telling you, it was probably just because she, you know, wasn't about standing up for herself and stuff.
And Sean was the kid that helped, like, dismember her, basically?
No, Sean was Sarah's boyfriend, apparently. He's the one that just noped out of the car, like, as soon as they got to Taco Bell.
Probably because he knew it was gonna happen. Wait a minute, what if he's the one that, like, coerced her to getting into the car?
I don't think so. I don't think he had anything to do with it.
Nah, I'm just speculating. I don't know. I'm just trying to, like, wrap my head around it, I guess.
Because, like, to me, who was, you know, more of, like, actively wanting, like, attention and stuff like that, I totally can understand why she got in the car.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, like, she had a very, like, hectic, troublesome life. And, you know, just with all the crazy things that happen in high school. I mean, because if you think about it, like, they were on the verge of a romantic relationship. There's plenty of people who are, like, who have, or in, like, abusive relationships who, you know, will go back to that person even after they threaten them.
Right. So do you think she was in, like, a, what do you think of the love triangle aspect of it?
I mean, I think that for Sarah, this was all just about jealousy and control. Because Sarah had other relationships. Like, apparently Sean was, like, a guy she was dating, you know. She was still hanging out with Corey, who was, like, in love with her, and, like, she'd dated him previously, apparently. But for some reason, you know, it wasn't okay if she wanted to go and, you know, hang out with somebody or sleep with somebody. Only Sarah could do that, and Sarah wanted complete control over her.
Yeah, I used to have a friend like that. We are no longer friends.
Like, to me, it almost sounds like, you know, they had, like, kind of an abusive relationship with where Sarah had all the power, and because, like, at the beginning, you know, she was starting to dress like Sarah and, you know, listen to the same music as Sarah, and they were, like, really close and, you know, potentially going to start this sexual relationship. To me, it seems like as she settled in to the school, Sarah started to feel like her control slipping. And, you know, I guess I think it's like leaving a abusive relationship is like the most dangerous time for a person in an abusive relationship, right?
Right.
So, like, I wonder if maybe she just kind of felt her control slipping away and was like, I don't know.
You know, and anyone that's listening, this is a domestic violence warning about what I'm about to talk about, so you might want to skip ahead a couple minutes. But I used to have neighbors, too, because we were going back to talking about strangulation, but my neighbor was in a domestic violence relationship that was extremely toxic, and they had a kid. But he would, like, literally strangle her to the point that she would pass out just before killing her. And I remember her telling me that, and, like, we saw, like, the marks on her neck and stuff, and she's like, he's so angry. But then she kept, like, going back to him, and, like, I understand the toxic relationship cycle and everything, of course, but it was, like, that was my real-life experience of, like, dealing with somebody that was, like, literally about to kill someone that I knew. And was trying, like, apparently it was trying to at some points. But it was just, like, it's so scary when you, like, we talk about it on here. And it's, you know, we're kind of being casual about it. And, like, the reality of the situation is, like, people are really, like, out there doing that kind of stuff every day.
Oh, yeah.
And we just don't hear about it.
I think in this episode, we should post some links to some helpful information if you yourself are in a toxic relationship, or resources on how to get out of it, or anything like that. But yeah. Is that all we got?
Okay, so if you are in danger, if you are in immediate danger, call 911 for anonymous confidential help 24/7. Please call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-7233. So that's 1-800-799-SAFE, or SAFE. That's just one of the resources, but I think that's a really important one to put out there. Just because we're talking about domestic violence, basically with this case, and as well as what I was just talking about.
Yep.
And yeah, I would also like to advocate and say that mental health matters. So if you feel like you're having any of these intrusive thoughts about hurting people or actively going out of your way to try and hurt people, I would seek out mental health help, as well as the person that's being threatened.
Do it. It's never too late to get help.
Exactly.
I mean, I guess unless you've already killed somebody, but then it's not too late to get help, but you can't take, there's no takesies backsies with killing people.
Yeah, that too.
So, yeah, thank you guys for listening.
Be sure to tune in next week to our new episode. We come out every Friday. And be sure to check out Science with Millennials.
Cool beans. Do you have a sign off?
I do. You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
So long, King Kong.
Bye.